You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, August 8th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. It's Casual Friday before I head off on vacation, so it's so casual. I barely slept last night to maintain the casualness of today. And on the program, as we do most, if not every, Casual Friday, we will be joined by Cliff Schechter to look back on the week in news. Also on the program, ostensibly to give me a film recommendation, Mark Maron. I do that every time he comes on. So lame. Will be joining us live from Tampa, Florida. I don't know what he's doing down there. I do know it is considered one of the striptease capital of the world. Also on the program today, here we go again, question mark? President authorizes, but not orders, attacks on ISIS in the context of, well, in a fairly broad context, but ostensibly to provide humanitarian relief for 20,000 trapped Iraqis on a mountain range in the north of Iraq. Also on the program today, why is no one covering this McDonald trial? It's salacious.
Depressing.
What, the trial is depressing?
It's salacious in an incredibly depressing way.
Yeah, maybe. Also on the program, we will touch on that Snowden story from the other day and a new report out by the Fed, which shows just how many people continue to suffer significantly in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. All that and more on today's program. A reminder, unlike, let's say, Mark Maron, we on this program rely on our members' support. We don't just go out and build this show off of other people's celebrity. We try and delve into... I wonder if he's listening now, right? This is my way of testing to see if he's listening now.
That was good.
We try and bring you in-depth interviews with interesting thinkers and activists and economists and authors, writers about the issues facing our society and our world, and we rely on you folks, our members, to make that possible. There is no really, in the world of political podcasts, there really is no other model short of going and getting funding from a big organization or, you know, I guess, although I do know there's a couple of outfits that do that, but we don't have that. And frankly, I don't really want it. Unless it's really a lot of money. But, I mean, it would have to be like a seven-figure injection into the show. Because, and, you know, maybe Mark and I will touch on this. I have a slight problem with bosses. And I don't want to ever have to second guess whether or not I do a story because it may piss off some big funder. This model, I know occasionally I'm going to piss off some people, but none of them contribute to the show enough that it would make me think twice about it. So if you want to be one of those people who I may occasionally piss off, but will not bend to your will by supporting this program, please become a member today at majority.fm. And of course, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link. Every little bit helps. Go to majorityreportkickback.com. Click on that Amazon link. Bookmark it. Buy your crap from there. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Buy the Majority Report blend. It's better than the WTF blend. And pick up our app, which is a free app.
So on it.
Unlike some other podcasts. At majorityapp.com. All right, we're going to take a break. Cliff Schechter will be joining us in just a second. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, it is the man who is, of course, the subject of the Cliff Schechter theme song. This song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Who could have imagined that one could pen and sing such a sweet song about a media strategist? Cliff Schechter, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, I don't think anybody I knew could ever imagine one could write a song about me in any way generally, unless it was about putting me in prison.
The great Jimmy Reefer Cake provided us that theme song. Now, so Cliff, all right, let's jump right into this. Of course, we should also mention before we do that the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas has ceased, and apparently they are now continuing again to fire rockets at each other.
You know, to solve lots of problems.
Yes, and you know, we 1,900 or plus, I think, Palestinians dead. UN reports about 80% are civilian deaths. Two dozen Israelis, two or three civilians, the rest military personnel, and it continues. And there are, you know, deeper questions that are being asked as to whether or not Israel had any really strategic goals in mind in this other than to scuttle the the new Palestinian unity government. But we've touched on that quite a bit. And we also now have another potential bomb dropping scenario, as it were. President
there
Obama.
Are definitely no lack of bomb dropping scenarios in
yes,
our lives.
Indeed. And President Obama, now apparently the fourth president in a row to authorize military action, or I should say, new military action in Iraq.
Is that a new record?
That very well may be. George Herbert Walker Bush, of course, with Operation, what was it, Iraqi Freedom? I get him confused. Desert Shield, I think it was. Desert Storm. And
maybe because we had both Reagan and Obama bombing Libya, but I don't think anybody did in between.
That's right.
I could be wrong.
It's a real shame to have those.
For one country.
It's a real shame to. I'm actually holding up my package of Desert Storm trading cards. I have a whole box of these still in their wrapper. Coalition.
Sort of like, if you got a Babe Ruth, you were hoping that those would have some serious value someday, and Schwarzkopf has just disappeared, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he died, but that wasn't, so that probably wasn't nice of me to say, but his value, let's just say, it didn't go the way of like a Babe Ruth or a Lou Gehrig, the way you thought it might.
Well, you know, I guess I thought they would become rare commodities. I didn't realize that we would be putting out trading cards for a new war every 7 or 8 years. So,
dilute the value, you know.
Be that as it may, let's just I want to get just some of the facts out about this why President Obama has purported to do this. There are anywhere between I've seen estimates from 15 to 40,000. Iraqis, Yazidi refugees. They are
right.
A particular a religious minority in Iraq that, along with a lot of Iraqi Christians and, frankly, some Iraqi Sunni Muslims, have been driven out of the areas in northern Iraq around Mosul. Over a half a million, and Shia, I should say, over a half a million internal refugees now from this latest round of violence. And these particular 20 to 40,000 people basically sought refuge on a mountain range, and they are stuck there on this Mount Sinjar in the northwest of Iraq with no supplies. There have been reports that about 20 children have died so far, and they are running out of supplies. ISIS forces are starting to bear down on them. And so the U.S. government will be dropping humanitarian relief to the extent that it can. Fighter jets will be accompanying these airdrops, and the president had said that targeted airstrikes could soon be used to protect American personnel in Erbil. It also could be used to protect Baghdad if it came under pressure, and it could also be used to protect Kurdish forces, as well as these. These 40,000 Iraqis. And in terms of congressional authorization, he has consulted with congressional leaders, and he said that in the event that military strikes actually take place, they plan to file a report under the War Powers Act. Now, they don't believe that they need authorization because of Article 2 dealing with the protecting U.S. lives in Erbil. And they also
right.
have a deal with Iraq in terms of some type of protection accord. But it seems like it's possible they will go forward with sort of some type of War Powers Act regime. In other words, they would file a report under the War Powers Act. They would have to justify the strikes under either why they are authorized or not, or then seek permission after 60 days if they continue. So that's where we're at. What are your thoughts?
What a mess. My thoughts are, as always, well, thanks again, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, for the situation. I think that my feeling on these things, I always worry, of course, about mission creep. President Obama has said openly that he will not get us re-involved in Iraq. Of course, you know, we've heard these kinds of things in the past. On the flip side of it, obviously, to me, this is the one time that I've often, you know, that I've made the argument that I think that air power needs to be used. Is you can't, I don't, you know, when we did this with Rwanda and other places, I really don't think you can sit there and watch a militant group march towards civilians and massacre them and do nothing. I think we need to certainly get humanitarian assistance, food, all of that to them. And I would say militarily, I don't believe we should do anything with that one exception I just said. I mean, clearly if satellites are showing these guys are marching towards civilians and are going to kill them, and that the only way at that particular moment to stop them from doing that is to bomb them, then I would favor bombing them to stop people from being massacred. Otherwise, no, I don't want massive bombings around the country, and I don't want large-scale American involvement. And then we need to get the UN involved and on the ground protecting them. And at some point, you know, we need to, I mean, I guess, I don't know, you know, I would say normally we'd want to get, in a situation like this, you want to get regional actors involved, but the whole region is in, you know, there's 15 different wars going on with everybody hating everybody else. I'm not sure how we could do that here. So that complicates the whole situation, too. So that, I mean, again, you know, I think that's far from perfect. I don't think there is anything close to perfect in this. But, yes, I don't think we should sit and watch civilians be massacred, and I don't think we can do that. But we do have to make sure we do not get re-involved in this war and it does not become a large-scale operation.
Yeah.
I wish I had better words of wisdom than that, but that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't popular with some people who listen to the program, obviously, but I tend to agree in the in situations where there is a broad consensus, and by that I mean really essentially from the UN. Now the Security Council condemned the attacks on ISIS attacks. They have urged international support for the Iraqi government. I don't know that they have specifically addressed the Yazidi situation, and I tend to actually want that type of assessment from the UN that there is an imminent real threat of a massacre of civilians before we act. And I do think that
I agree
is
100%. Yep.
In situations where we have the capacity to stop something like that, I think we should. Now, you know, the problem is, of course, is that rarely do we stop in those situations after we have done that. It, you know, more often than not, it is the case that it functions as a fig leaf. Now, of course, you know, Libya ended up our so-called coalition partners there ended up more or less supporting the overthrow of Gaddafi. I don't think that's
I didn't agree with that, to be clear, with what we did in Libya, because I didn't think that there was a very clear case. That my biggest problem, you know, is, you know, one minute when you get the sort of neocons like John McCain, one minute he's like taking pictures with guys and saying how wonderful they are, or going and hanging out with Gaddafi in a big tent, and the next minute he's talking about bombing them. You have to be very clear. And, well, you know, and I know this isn't popular with all of your listeners, but on this one thing, I guess, with some people on the left, I have to disagree, which is I would say every other option has to be exhausted. I know there's the possibility of mission creep. I know there are people that want to get involved for nefarious reasons, from oil to geopolitical reasons. I know all that. I just think if you do have that kind of an assessment and it is clear, I just don't think you can sit there and watch civilians sit on a mountain as a militant force heads towards them and massacres them. If that is very clear that is the case and a bombing is limited to that, then I am in favor.
Yeah, well, in Libya, the UN did pass a resolution that was to specifically stop the slaughter of innocents I'm not sure I remember what the city was. But
probably Benghazi.
It very actually could have been. Now, with that said, I believe that Western forces went beyond the resolution that had been passed, went beyond the authorization provided by the resolution.
That's the way I feel too, Sam. What I'm saying is if it had been limited to protecting civilians being slaughtered, and that had been exactly only what we had done, then, you know, I understand probably people in your chat room and other places will raise the question, well, why won't it go beyond that here?
They won't, because and I that, don't have that, a chat room. I got rid of that.
Oh.
So that's not, not going to be a problem at all.
When did you do that?
Well, I never had a chat room, but...
didn't you have a place where you sat there?
No, we just literally did it in this room. With
your chat room right there, with those two geniuses that you work with.
Wow.
What kind of chats are they throwing?
Here's the bottom line. I mean, can we really just sit by, and particularly in Iraq, where I believe that we have a huge responsibility for this? That's my feeling here. And of course, I think it is incumbent upon all of us to make sure that we do not supersede this very narrow mission. Now, here's the thing. The reason why we will not see expansion of this mission while Maliki is the head of the Iraqi government is because this is the leverage the United States is using. Maliki has lost support of the Iranians. He has lost support of the Americans. He, of course, has alienated the Sunni population there, which in many respects has led to this dominance by ISIS. And ISIS now, we should say, has heavy weaponry that they have gotten from what was the Iraqi army in the north and our own weapons. So we will be... if we do engage with ISIS, probably bombing our own tanks or
isn't it funny how that always ends up happening?
Yes, well, somebody's going to make some cash here, and so at least that will.
Let's thank Paul Bremer again for shutting down the for kicking everybody out of the army and basically putting a scarlet letter on anybody who'd been part of the Ba'ath regime because that worked out well.
Michael wanted to add something.
Oh, it's just. It's darkly amusing, but a couple of weeks ago when ISIS, they rolled through a place and they stole some, took tanks that we had sold. And they tweeted out that they got these things and that they trusted that the American firms would honor the warranties on them.
Oh, God.
There you go.
Vicious bastards.
So that's that. I mean, we will obviously... we're going to be on vacation next week, but Matt and Mike will be talking about this on Monday, I imagine. And, you know, I just don't think that you can let 30 or 40,000 people, civilians, just die on a mountaintop.
Specifically genocidal.
Yeah, I mean, that is specifically genocidal. I just don't think that you can do that.
It is. And if that's the only thing, we're the only thing, and that's the only thing that can stop it, then, again, you know, I to me, war is literally at the way end there, the last resort to anything is using force. But in this particular case, I again, If one group's marching towards the other one about to massacre them, one group's made up of civilians, the other group is made up of these hardened militants. I just don't know what else you do. I certainly don't think you can sit there and watch it.
All right, let's shift to something that's happening in Cincinnati, where your environs there in Ohio, and I wanted to, before we get there, just mention it in the context of what's happening in Detroit. We've been reporting on the the situation where the emergency manager of Detroit had went ahead with basically shutting off people's water for unpaid bills. The mayor now has been given the authority to come up with a plan. He has now approved of a plan which will slow the roll there and provide financial assistance for people. It is not as much as activists have been asking for. They've been asking for a complete moratorium, but it is at least a step in the right direction. And at the very least, at least it's somebody who's accountable to the voters who is doing this. And so there's been some progress there. But what's happening in Cincinnati?
Well, and you know, in a way, a segue towards this, some other things happening in Detroit. We were just talking about Iraq. I don't know if you felt the way I did, but among the many things that horrified me when we attacked Iraq was that good old genius Rumsfeld did not think to protect their historical museum there. I wish I could remember the name of it, and that these priceless artifacts were just stolen.
Right, and I think at that point he basically said, "Shit happens."
Right, shit happens. You know, we've lost world treasures. You know, these priceless things. And so the same thing, you know, over the last 6 months, this argument's been going on back and forth in Detroit, where because their creditors, you know, the city's bankrupt and they're demanding their money, they said that the city's art had to be included in this, which, again, just, I mean, I don't know it's because I've studied history. I don't think so. I just think, how can anyone sit there and think that these types of items can become part of a bargain? It's such a Tea Party mentality to me. And that's why, you know, thinking of that, what was going on in Detroit, we've had something happen here the other day in Cincinnati and along those same lines, and that's why I wanted to talk about it, because it's the broader context of this Tea Party virus. You know, you hear about it federally, and you hear about it maybe from these governors like Scott Walker, but you don't always hear about what these guys do locally. And so to make a long story short, here where I am in Cincinnati, it's in Hamilton County, and you've got one Democrat, you've got three county commissioners, one's a Democrat, one is a Tea Party loon, and one is a Republican who sort of tries to be center-right Chamber of Commerce guy. But in the end, we've got these two unbelievable sort of what you'd call historic treasures from when Cincinnati was a pretty important city, you know, in the steamboat era in the 19th century. We've got this music hall here, which is considered one of the sort of the most perfect in terms of auditory, I don't know what the right words are, you know, in the world, and that's where the symphony is and the opera and the pops, and that was built in 1878. And then we've got Union Terminal here, which was when the railroad era, we had the Baltimore, Ohio Railroad went through there and other railroads around the country. And that, because we had this smart mayor, let me give you his name. His name was Jerry Springer. You may have heard of him. Back in the 1980s, they got a whole bunch of money together with Union Terminal because they were going to let it go, this historic landmark, and they turned it into this fantastic historic museum. It's got a kids' museum. It's got a natural history museum. It's amazing. So we wanted to put a levy here on that would raise the sales tax by 25%. Chamber of Commerce, in addition to all the people, progressives, in addition to people who are, you know, think that our heritage should be protected, who are in favor of it. You had the Chamber of Commerce and others that realize it leads to tourism, that formula of whatever you invest in infrastructure, is it $3 you make back from every one you put in, whatever that is. And they got behind it. And you have this sort of, literally this committee got together, and we're talking the former CEO of Procter & Gamble and Kroger and every other major business here in addition to nonprofits and others who said that this should happen. And the problem here is that the Hamilton commissioners can decide, Hamilton County commissioners can decide on their own whether they're going to allow this levy to go forward. And so they just made a decision And the one guy that's supposed to be a swing vote, that's supposed to be sort of a center-right conservative, joined the Tea Party guy in saying that they are not going to allow us to vote even to protect this, you know, historic treasure, the city hall here, and basically they're letting it fall apart. Mm. And I can't tell you, I mean, this city is up in arms, and it's not, it's everybody, it's 90%, it's whatever. And, you know, I want to talk about it because I want to say anybody who is in the region here and cares about this stuff, this guy Chris Monzel is one of these Tea Partiers, is going to be on the ballot in November. Remember that. Remember that, you know, Greg Hartman's the name of the second guy. These guys should be protested. They shouldn't be allowed to literally go outside and breathe without having somebody in their face. But I think it's important for a lot of people in the cities that you're in that you pay attention to what's going on locally, because this Tea Party virus has infected everything. It's, you know, I'll use your roads and I'll use your internet and I'll use everything, but no, no taxes for me. I'm a sovereign citizen. I shouldn't have to do anything. It's the Clive and Bundy mentality. And they don't, I mean, they claim they're for American values. You know, the word conservative originally comes from conserve, doesn't it? But they will let our whole history just, they couldn't give a crap. They don't have an understanding of history and no appreciation of it. To let some of this, you know, music hall from 1878 just become decrepit and fall apart offends every part of me. So that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I know there are people, because some of them have reached out to me, who are listeners who are somewhere in the region here. And quite frankly, if you're in the Detroit area, because there's a Defend Detroit's Fine Arts Museum site that I found that's up too, and people should be up in arms about that, even the possibility of selling off these historic treasures to creditors there. There are some things that are beyond money, which seems, you know, that hasn't been, we haven't accepted
right,
well,
that's
that
our neoliberal age, isn't it? Is that there's if you can't put a dollar figure on it, then it has no value. And then once you put that dollar figure on it, that's the value, and you can sell it off. There is nothing that can't be quantified, and the market always uber always. And, you know, it's funny, yesterday on the program, we had Rick Perlstein on, and, you know, for his new book, which is sort of the third in what I mistakenly said the other day was a trilogy, because I actually think he's going to do a fourth, and who knows, maybe he'll do a fifth. At one point, he's going to get ahead of us. But
he's going to start doing the future and letting us know how crappy it's going to be 10 years from now.
I don't know if you've read the book. And I'm still
I'm working on
winding
it.
Way my way through it. But it's a fascinating look at a time like when we were kids, 1973 to 1976, which was a very tumultuous time in American history. And it basically speaks to the rise of Reagan, who was, you know, really just the third of you know, this being Perlstein's third book about the sort of the rise of the conservative movement and essentially the exploitation of what has been a split in this country, you know, probably since the Civil War, and a sort of a reigniting of, in some ways, of that split. And there was a poll that came out, CNN put out the other day, actually, and this really just struck me, just in light of both of that conversation I had with Perlstein yesterday, which if folks haven't had a chance to listen to that interview, it's I highly recommend it, and I highly recommend the book. Thinking for a moment about the Watergate affair during President Richard Nixon's administration, it has now been 40 years since Nixon resigned as president. Which of these two statements comes closer to your own point of view about Watergate? It was a very serious matter because it revealed corruption in the Nixon administration, or it was just politics, the kind of thing both parties engage in. And now, for those of us who were, you know, sort of lived through it and certainly saw it, this was a constitutional, I don't know if it was a constitutional crisis, but it was stunning.
It wasn't far in a lot of ways.
Right.
I mean, you had a guy who... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, and the entire country was watching these hearings. And, you know, Gerald Ford's favorability rating plummeted after he pardoned Nixon. And it was part of a time that, as Perlstein outlines, was probably one of the most tumultuous in at least our modern history in terms of our civil society. This, you tell me if you remember this. There were... There was a bombing during Christmas time at LaGuardia Airport baggage claim where 20 people died in, like, I think it was 75, I think he was saying. Do you remember that? Because you grew up in New York.
Yeah, I did, and I don't. I mean, I was, you know, so I was born literally almost New Year's Eve of 72.
Oh,
so
all right. I didn't realize you were that much younger than me, Cliff.
I'm not, am I? You're only a few years older than that. But I think that makes all the difference, right? Because you would have been like, what, six then? Five or six, and I was three. So that's
closer to 10.
Oh,
nine.
Sammy.
Yeah.
You're in such good shape.
Thanks.
What are the pills you're taking?
Well, there's a lot of them. I'll tell you that
now. Well, tell me, because, I mean, I'm aging rapidly.
Mostly sugar pills. But, I was more conscious at that time. I mean, six, of course, you're not going to tell a six-year-old. But a 9- or 10-year-old, you're watching, you know, you catch some of that stuff. It's not the same media age then as it is today. But all right, so just to give a sense of just what was happening, there was something like in 75, there was something like 80 bombings in this country. 80 bombings. But meanwhile, so back to this Watergate question. People ages 18 to 34, 44% say it was a serious matter. 52% say just politics.
You know, but what's important about that, again, is what it tells us, what they've done on the right, and they've done it successfully.
Yep.
And that's why people ask for the answer of why we're so polarized, because it works for everybody who on the right who gains from that polarization. The entertainment complex we've talked about, by demonizing everything about the left and the center and hell, the center right, that's how they drive up their numbers, and it works. It works for corporations, because the tobacco companies learned that if they could make tobacco a partisan issue, and tribally get people on the right to just defend tobacco without thinking about it, because the left didn't like it, so it had to be, that meant it had to be good, they would benefit, and they could turn anything into a controversy that was just about politics. And oil companies, the gun industry, and numerous others have smartly done that too, and made it something along partisan lines. You see that. Obviously, you know, it's that started with a lot of these guys during Reagan's time, a little bit before, but it's almost like when that was when it was perfected, this kind of, and it's only gotten worse because there are places where culturally you couldn't go during Reagan's era. I mean, you know, you didn't talk really, unless you wanted to get smacked around, about privatizing Social Security. It was never thought you could bring up child labor laws. I mean, you know, but they've made a sort of advancement slowly but surely on the economic issues, particularly culturally, moving it over. And that's what I love, by the way, about Rick Perlstein's books, you know, besides the fact that he copies every word from Craig Shirley.
Right.
that whole thing's so laughable.
We talked about it briefly yesterday.
And don't call him Shirley. Sorry, I had to say that. Come on, airplane?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Okay, good. At least somebody got it. Sam was the one guy who got it and still didn't laugh.
I smiled.
I got a smile. I'll take that. But I mean,
that's,
you know, because Rick understands the importance of culture in politics, and how culture reflects your politics, and how it can tell you what sort of the Overton window is going to be, because what your culture is what political movements will be allowed, and what, you know, where they can fit in, and what, you know, where people will say you're fringe and where you're not fringe. And that's why those books, you know, are so amazing, because, you know, you're reading about Reagan, and he's even rapping Jaws into it, and, you know, important music of the time.
Wacky
and,
packages, I mean, dude. Wacky packages.
There you go. I recommend people reading all of them. I mean, they're the kinds of books, they're these long books that I would think that I couldn't, you know, have the patience to read, and then they are so fascinating with their look at culture and what was going on that it's like an easy read. It's the easiest 800 pages you have ever read in your life, any of them.
I just want to circle back for a second on that Watergate question, because to me, you see the brilliance of White Watergate. That was what they called the Clinton thing. That's the investigation that led to that went from a savings and loan, I think it was, Whitewater, I'm not sure, or a real estate deal in Arkansas that they supposedly, the Clintons had, I don't know, made $100,000 off of whatever, they had chased that down, and then it was Travelgate. And right. It was,
and the Clintons didn't, sadly, I really think in a lot of those cases, didn't effectively defend themselves against those things and say these are ridiculous. Granted, they were in more difficult times in terms of a rising conservative media and institutions that didn't exist on the left. I always give them some leeway because of that, but you know those that it was all.
Well, I'll tell you what I think their problem was. I mean, is that it's almost in the same way. It's the same as Cuomo has. You know, you can if you don't have an energized base, there's really no one to protect you in those instances. You know, I mean, Cuomo, I think, you know, it remains to be seen. I believe that Zephyr Teachout will be certified and will be on the ballot for the Democratic primary. She doesn't have very wide name recognition in New York State. Hopefully even this suit will help. So, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle for her. But when... And in Cuomo's instance, I think there's actually a there, frankly, but as opposed to in the Clinton instance. But there was no real rallying of support for Clinton until the Republican House impeached him and began the impeachment process. And they did so over something that was so ridiculous that it was not hard for people to understand what it was that they were impeaching him over. It was over his lying in a deposition or parsing in a deposition as to whether
or not being asked questions that were leaked to them that they never should have known to ask. I mean, there was another thing that they allowed, you know,
Ken Starr was looking into white was looking into Whitewater, and then some woman who I can't remember her name, was it Lucianne Goldberg, had convinced her buddy to tape Monica Lewinsky conversations,
right,
and then said, ask whether or not he's had sex with the woman and get him on.
Who, by the way, that wasn't the worst thing she ever did. Producing Jonah, I think, we would say is even worse.
Right. I mean, that's...
I mean, how you could produce that pile of dough. But in any case, let's move beyond that for a second. But when it came to that, I mean, here's the thing, is Ken Starr was having things leaked to him by people from his former firm,
right,
which is the firm that was representing Paula Jones in her lawsuit. Like, the whole thing was just a setup.
Right.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, now you've got, Obama's just saying impeachment, which they say in between all of their own people bringing up impeachment, which now seems to have become something you have to say to fend off a primary in the GOP. And these guys have impeachment threats, even though they're trying not to admit it publicly in their private gatherings with their base. They're talking about it all the time.
Yep.
And because it's become so politicized now, because the right, like so many other things, as we've discussed, politicizes anything where they want there to be a controversy where there is none, like global warming. There is no controversy there. But they've created one because then it'll take us a lot longer to act, and their people will blindly defend them on it. And so they do the same thing with impeachment, because now anytime, I mean, look at what happened. The likeliness, I mean, people, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush should have been impeached. But one of the main reasons Democrats probably didn't do it is they felt like, well, then everybody will just say we're doing it because of Clinton.
Right.
So basically they take that away. They politicize impeachment and take that away. And they get people who are younger who don't remember or haven't studied history to think that what happened with Nixon, you know, was anything political at all. Not that, you know, that Barry Goldwater didn't walk up to the White House to him, as he famously did, and tell him, it's over, you need to resign. That there weren't a number of Republicans among those who were most stridently
going after him. It was completely bipartisan at that time, completely bipartisan. Yes. And Reagan was the first Republican to actually come out and defend Nixon. But Cliffy, we have hit that time, buddy. Time flies when you're having fun.
I better go have a beer or something. I need something to get me through the day if I can't talk on this show any longer.
Well, we're going to have you're going to have to drink heavily next Friday, because we will be on vacation and we have a pre-record planned. So, Cliff, we'll talk to you end of August. As always, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your day and weekend.
All right. And, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Marc Maron. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, want to welcome back to the program the former co-host of Break Room Live. Apparently been up to some other things over the past 5 or 6 years. Marc Maron. Hello, Marc.
I always enjoy hearing your radio voice. It brings back such exciting memories for me. I'm using exciting diplomatically.
What, are you saying that my radio voice is different than my normal voice?
Yes, Sam, I am saying that. Absolutely, I'm saying that.
You know, I've noticed, Marc, I mean, if we want to just jump right into this and get rid of, you know, and avoid any of these sort of the salutations and the jibber-jabber, I've noticed that as of late, your texts, when you return texts to me, that they're very curt and short. What's going on? Are you upset? I mean, what's happening?
No, I'm not. I don't know text etiquette. Sometimes, you know, everything's working at a very fast pace for me, and I just, you know, lump in your text with the, you know, a lot of the other stuff that's coming in, and I'm sorry if I've been insensitive.
So you're really busy. Is that what you're saying? Is that your way of saying that you're really busy?
I'm pretty busy, but like I think I'm operating at a level of anxiety where every text seems like an imposition of some kind. So,
well, that's what
it's
I'm
not
saying.
Just you.
That's coming through. No, I'm not. Believe me, I'm not taking it personally. I'm basically what I'm doing is I'm taking your temperature because I'm a little bit concerned because you know you were in a phase for a while. I mean, it was probably a couple of months, but where you were much more, you seem more carefree. Now you seem to, like, the anxiety seems to be creeping back.
It is back. What are you doing for yours? Are you on medicine? I don't know what the hell
everybody
to do
keeps
about
asking
it.
Me
I don't know
what
why.
Pills I'm taking. I don't know.
What's that?
Everybody keeps asking me about what pills I'm taking. No, right now I'm not on any medicine. I just not with my children at the moment. So that's why I seem so relaxed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, look, I'm okay. Just like, I'm working really hard and, you know,
what are you doing?
Work. What are you talking about?
Like, what do you mean you're working really hard? Your show's over, your TV show, right? What are you doing these days?
Well, I do the podcast and I'm doing a lot of stand-up and, you know, I'm trying to, you know.
It's just two shows a week, though, on your podcast, right?
It is two shows a week.
Okay.
But, you know, but there's a lot of interviews that go on as well. And I've been traveling a lot, doing doing stand up, and I'm trying to think about the future a little bit. You know, it's like when you have a life like you have, which is a life of responsibility to others. I think that that sort of is a good thing because you get out of yourself a bit. When you have my life, it's just sort of my brain just runs away from me because it has nowhere to land, and it's sort of it's not tragic, but I'd like to reel it in a little bit. So even if I'm not as busy as you think I am, my brain is very busy. and it's not my friend lately.
I see. You know that you ever read any Robert Stone? You ever read Flag for Sunrise?
What was the other one? What was the Vietnam one? Are they all Vietnam ones?
I feel like.
Yeah. Like I started that one. No, would that help me? Are you telling me that if I read Robert Stone, it'll put things into perspective? Is this a self-help recommendation, Sam?
No. No. It just reminded me there was a passage, and it's been years since I read the book. But the protagonist, I think, was sitting on some type of deck of a hotel or something, looking down at the people who were struggling in, I think he was in Mexico. And I'm completely paraphrasing, but Stone wrote something like, and the protagonist responded to this scene of these people in the way that he had been trained to, which was self-pity. And I don't know why that occurred to me as you were talking about how hard it is that you're, you know, doing your 2 days a week podcast and traveling.
Oh, I see. So I understand now. You're being condescending.
Not condescending. I don't think that's the word.
No, I understand. You're very busy with your show every day, taking in the news of the world,
right,
putting your point of view out there, fighting the good fight like a martyr. You're sort of coming, that's what it is. You're being a martyr right now. It's not condescending. But being a martyr is much more appealing than being self-pitying. And I appreciate that. But I don't feel like I'm necessarily being self-pitying. I'm just a little amped up. And I'd like to get a little clarity, a little peace of mind. That seems to be elusive to me, Sam.
Well, let's talk about this. What's bothering you, Mark?
What's bothering me?
Yeah, come on.
Well, I don't really know what to do with with my life. I don't know what I enjoy necessarily. I'm trying to figure stuff out. You know, like when you have a significant other in your life, or you're, you know, someone, at least somebody who lives in town, and you have children and you have things to show up for, you know, a lot of that is dictated, and you make time for the things you enjoy. Like, I'm literally at a point in my life where, you know, I got a lot of things going on, and I'm happy to be employed, and I'm happy to be, you know, earning a living. But, like, you know, I'm 50 years old, and, like, some days I'm just sort of like, well, what do I like to do? Why am I not doing that? And then, like, I'll figure out something I want to do, and I'll be like, well, then I got to drive there, and I don't know if I can park. So is that really worth it? And then, you know, that becomes a conversation. Then I don't go, and I'm like, that was stupid. Why didn't I go? They have valet parking, and now I missed that thing. See, this is what my brain does. Not really self-pity. It's just a cycle of self-flagellation over bullshit. So I'm just trying to get out of that loop and enjoy my life. Is that so horrible?
No, that's not so horrible, but wait a second. So you're dating someone who lives out of town? Is that what I gather from that?
I've been seeing somebody who lives, out of town, and it's a little difficult, and it's hard to know, you know, how to handle that.
All right. Well, I mean, come on. You have a girlfriend in every port, don't you? I mean, down in Tampa.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
No. No. I don't. You know, I'm too old for that business.
Oh, really? Are you really? Wow, that's good for you, boy. You've really that's.
I don't want to make my life crazy, Sam. It's not what I want to do.
Of course you do, Mark. Come on.
No, why would you say that? You're saying that whatever's going on in my mind is something that I enjoy, and that it, you know, it's something that I do no matter what what point in my life I'm at, because it's all I know, and it's where I generate my feelings and emotions and material from, and it's something I pay lip service to changing, but I don't make any effort to do so because it's what I'm comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying, Sam?
Well, I would add that I think you don't. It's not just a question of paying lip service to changing. You actively, I think, maintain that. I mean, that would be my thing. That would be what
I would
say.
All I want to do is maybe run 2 days a week, maybe do a light workout 1 day a week, and I think everything will change. I don't have to eat the way I do. You know, this is like
Fitbit.
So
are you going to get a Fitbit?
I don't know what that is. But, you know, like, and then, like, recently I've been, like, I'm like, wow, I'm really out of the loop politically. So I picked up that Henry Giroux book with the complicated title, and I started reading the news more diligently. I haven't started listening to your show, but I hear it's very good.
Well, I was going to say, why pick up the Henry Giroux book? Why not just listen to my podcast?
That takes time, and I'm busy thinking about me. So,
this is my point. Like, you see, you're talking about, like, you've got you all trapped in your head, and you're bouncing off. But you could just put in your earplugs and listen to the show.
Okay.
Would it make you feel better? Yeah. Would it be an enticement to you if I could tell you that I know what the reaction you'll have to it is? You'll be upset that you're not following the news and that Sam is, and then it'll go back to you.
Well, I just have to figure out, how do you get your show? Right off the website, right?
Well, you don't have my app? Do you not have my app? You don't have my app, do you? It's a free app.
Okay, so what, I just do it on my phone?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I'll do it, like, right when I hang up.
You know what's really stunning? You know what's really stunning is that you haven't even – I mean, this is – you know, and look, if we're going to work on this whole thing where you're going to get out of yourself, even if it's like we know that it's really just temporary, right?
Yeah.
You never even asked me what happened with the radio show.
I heard little things. Did you tell me about it?
I'm sorry?
I don't think you told me about it. I think Brendan told me about it. Did you tell me about it? You did terrestrial radio for a little while?
Yeah, no, I told you I was doing it. I mean, I'll go back to, like, right now.
I've been very busy. I'm sorry. I just, you know, it's hard for me to...
Like, what have you been doing? That's been so busy. I mean, what were you doing when you did your show? Like, okay, so you're traveling, but what are you doing today? You're just hanging out, going to coffee shops, talking up to the baristas there, right?
And I got to perform for 10,000 people today. I'm driving myself crazy trying to put a set
together.
Wait,
you got a 10,000 person?
Yeah, I'm doing this oddball fest in Tampa.
Oh, it's
I'm
a
doing
festival.
An outdoor amphitheater.
Come on. Come on.
What are you talking about?
Oh, it's an outdoor thing. All right, it's a festival. It's not like a theater.
No, but it's like I've never played for 10,000 people outdoors.
Yeah,
I
who else is
out
going
out?
Is
no
it just
idea
you?
What I'm walking into.
Is, huh? It, is it just you?
No, it's Jeff Ross hosting, and then
yeah,
Brent
they're
Warren,
there to see
me,
Jeff Ross. You know that.
Reggie Watts, Hannibal Buress, Aziz Ansari, Chris Hardwick, and Louie.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. So come on.
What?
Like, well, it's not like people are going to, like, you know, if Marin's not good, I've got my money worth.
No, of course not. But I'd like to be good. I'd like to,
no,
you know, it's like it's a new challenge. So you're asking me what I'm doing. I'm driving myself a little crazy trying to put a set together because I'm a professional comedian and I want to do a good show for 10,000 people.
All right.
And that takes work.
No, I know. I'm not, you know, but I know 10,000, 500.
Tell me about your ridiculous foray into terrestrial radio.
No, forget it. I'm not going
to. No, no.
Come on.
Now who's being self-pitying? Why don't you just tell me.
So
what happened?
If you'll recall, the last time we spoke, or I think you know, we texted about it. I was taking I was doing 3 to 6 because Ed Schultz had resigned, had left radio, retired from radio. Randy Rhodes retired, all within a 2-week period, and so Tom Hartman moved down to 12 to 3, and 3 to 6 opened up, and. I got into business with a couple of gentlemen, one of whom you know, and the other one you may probably know as well. And they, you know, they said it's going to be an entrepreneurial thing. You got to do it for, you know, maybe 60 or 90 days before you get paid because of the billing cycle. And I was like, all right. And it was hard. You know, I was doing 5 hours of radio a day practically and 4.5 or so. And about 5 weeks in, they tell me that their cost projections were 300% higher than they thought they would be. And revenue turned out to be 11 times less than they had thought. And I was like, well, what are the new projections? They told me, and it appeared that I would not be getting paid until January of 2015. And... At that point, I said, hey, this show's not viable. And they're like, no, the show's viable. And I'm like, well, it's viable because...
Wait, let me ask you a question. So they ran the old Lefty Talk radio con on you?
Yeah.
You fell for that again, Sam?
I did. I did.
Boy, they saw you coming.
Hey, they did. At least nobody said, like, look, when I got a brain tumor and then went on to...
They didn't have to. Yeah. They're like, this guy's desperate.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was excited, you know, to be on terrestrial radio. There's something about that that's still very fun.
No, I agree with you.
But and I said, well, yeah, the show is totally viable. We could actually do this show forever if we paid no one.
But, oh, but all right. So did you leave on good terms?
I'm curious. Yeah, I left on good terms. I was so happy with them. What do you mean, good terms?
Well, you're always so diplomatic when you have a problem with authority and power.
I actually handled this quite well. Handled this quite well. Let me tell you something. They sent me an email. One of the guys sent me an email, right? Because I was saying, like, look, you guys have no skin in the game. I'm actually paying my producers extra to fill in for me on the Majority Report. And in addition to working another, whatever it is, 100, 120 hours a month, you guys are just sitting there. So for you, it doesn't matter if the show, you know, if I'm not getting paid. And so on the day before I announce it on air, or that day, I get an email from one of them saying, Sam, FYI, below is another expense we're going to have to try and figure out how to cover for this startup. And I look at the bottom of it, there's an invoice attached, and it's an invoice for the imaging, you know, where they go, now, Sam Cedar. And it was for $250.
Yeah.
And they were trying to figure out how they were going to pay for this.
Oh, my God. That was like when the last version of Air America was in trouble, and they brought that CFO in. And, you know, they brought me into the office to go over my moving expenses. They'd given me, you know, $5,000 to relocate from Los Angeles to New York. And I didn't relocate. I had the apartment in Astoria, but it was empty. So I just got the stuff I needed to live there, and, you know, which included, you know, pots and pans and, you know, a television. And, you know, like it was my $5,000 to spend however I wanted. So they brought me into that office to make this argument that, like, we gave you that money to move here, not to just buy a bunch of stuff for your apartment. And this is when they're going down the drain. So, you know, what was my argument? It's like, you're right. I should have just relocated here entirely because this is going so well. And they were sort of trying to nickel and dime me over, like, you know, pots and pans and, all right, a guitar amplifier. But, you know, I didn't want to show up. So...
Hold on, wait a second. Now we know why Air America went under. It's only taken 6 years of intensive investigation or whatever, 5 years.
It was that guitar amp. But I gave them that money back for the amp, and it was only like $350.
You know, that's unbelievable because they were looting that place. Those guys were looting that place. But be that as it may. What's next? I was finally going to get interviewed in the garage that week. You remember I was coming out?
Yeah, Sam, let me explain something to you. That's going to happen. We can do that. There's no panic. And to tell you the truth, season of Marin, We had broken a story that was built around you and I. And,
oh, yeah,
you know, when we submitted
this.
The stories, you know, there was like another thing that was sort of inside, and, you know, and that one went to the side. But if I get a new season, you know, I'm not just blowing smoke. I mean, I think that you and I could do a great episode, both of the podcast and of Marin. And I want to make that happen. And I'm not stringing you along. It just didn't happen. But hopefully, you know, obviously the podcast is going to keep going, and that can happen. But hopefully
yeah,
we'll
know,
do
you never
Really?
Well, you know, these things, that nothing's written in stone, buddy. What's happening with the lawsuit? Anything?
Dude, yeah, something went on. Yeah, hell yeah, it did. You didn't see all that stuff. I know Gaza is and Iraq is very consuming, but the truth is that they tried to weasel out of their suit against Corolla.
Oh.
Corolla's dumped $500,000 into this thing, and then all of a sudden Personal Audio releases a statement saying, we want to, retract our suit, but I guess with prejudice against Corolla, because these podcasters just don't make the money we thought they did. So they drag him into court. They go through a disclosure process. But this is just their way of weaseling out, because the EFF already filed the re-exam, which is going to, fall against them. Corolla's been fighting a good fight, and people have been, helping him out with that. And they basically want to say, like, we're not going to sue you now, but we're going to – it's without prejudice, am I correct, when they can do it later?
Mm.
So they left that in there. And he's like, well, no, I'm going to countersue because, I'm already in this thing and we want to kill this patent. And you can't do it without prejudice, because that just means you're going to come back around whenever you feel like it. So it was a pretty amazing thing that they tried to weasel out and move on to bigger fish. But, we've all sort of supported Adam to continue fighting and move more money towards the defense fund to countersue and kill this patent once and for all, because it's an extortion racket. So those were pretty big things. That was a pretty big turn.
Oh, wow. That is a big deal. No, I hadn't been following it because, what's that?
I said I missed that too.
Yeah, Matt, who's generally on such things, missed that as well.
I did hear about
Mangria, though. Apparently Adam Carolla is selling his own Mangria brand of wine.
Yeah. The issues with, who he is as an entertainer and politically and what he sells to his people is, I understand all that, but.
No,
but,
I know. He's fighting the good fight, and he's protecting the medium, and I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't drink Mangria, and I frankly don't know who does. But he seems to do okay with it. And Joe Rogan sells kettlebells.
Kettlebells?
Kettlebells are cool.
What are those?
Yeah.
They're like this Russian weight. It's structured like a bell, basically. And it's like a free form weight.
Never heard of it.
That's a legitimate thing.
Yeah, you seem to be out of loop with some pretty important stuff.
I didn't know. Well, the thing is, we don't in the politics podcast business, you don't have the audience to sell, to build a winery and sell that or sell, barbells or whatever. But we occasionally,
Sell. The beta male.
You're in the market of aggravated ideas, Sam. That's where we have something in common still.
What's that? Aggravated ideas. What do you mean?
Listen
to my show.
You don't
listen to the show, so you can't really judge.
No, but I get an aggregated news dispatch every day, from a mutual friend of ours that,
What? What are you talking about?
I get like a package every day of the news, and I know what's going on a bit, and I haven't really been getting into it, but you never know when that's going to happen.
Is he sending you that?
Yeah.
Oh, I want on that distribution list, too. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I want that. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about my show. I'm saying you don't listen to the show.
I'm going to start listening to it right
now.
Yeah,
go listen to the Rick Perlstein interview yesterday. You'll find it very interesting because it, it's about 73 to 76.
Okay. All right. I'll listen. I'm making note of it now. I'm writing it down.
Get the app and download it.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it all right now.
So you having fun? Have you run into Louie down there or what?
Haven't done anything yet. I got in last night, and I went out and had Cuban food with Jeff Ross and Jeff Wills and Brody Stevens and Hardwick.
Do you get along with those guys? Do you get along with, Ross and Hardwick these days or what?
I do. Yeah, I get along with them. It comes and goes, but, the core of it is in place. We're all entertainers, and I'm trying to be a worker among workers, a man among men. Look, I got my problems, I don't have to live in them. That's growth. You see, I'm not going to sit and throw anybody under the bus just because they're more successful than me, or I don't think they deserve what they have.
What? You said you're not going to throw them under the bus because you don't think they deserve what they have. I mean, you just did.
No, that's the old Mark, and it was really just me trying to be funny. I get along with everybody right now except for myself.
Okay, that's fine. So how's Jeff Ross doing? Is he doing good?
He's good. Yeah, he's, you know, he's Jeff Ross. He's like, you know, I just interviewed Bob Newhart. The thing is, like, it's show business, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, I spent 2 hours with Bob Newhart at his house the other day.
Yeah.
And
did
and
you make him hold the phone
Monday.
To his head while you interviewed him the whole time?
That's very funny, Sam.
Thanks.
No, it's very funny. It's very because he does a phone thing. That was good. You know, take a shot at an 84-year-old man. That's who you are.
No, I'm not taking a shot at him. I'm a huge fan of Bob Newhart.
Look, you go back and listen to the tape and tell me that wasn't a shot. So. But that'll be up Monday. But then I started thinking about show business and about, like, you know, when you talk about Jeff Ross, you know, Jeff Ross is very, he knows exactly what he does as a performer. He's found a niche for himself. You know, he's like classic showbiz in a way. What I always say about Jeff Ross is, you know, the end of The Shining where, you know, they zoom in on the picture from the 20s and there's Jack Nicholson and the butler says, "You've always been here, Mr. Torrance." That's how I feel about Jeff Ross in show business.
All right. And where would you fit into that movie?
I'm not clear on that. Someone's going to have to make that observation.
The dog getting the blowjob. Yeah.
No, that's not appropriate.
What happened?
I don't know. He said something about the dog and, I don't know, licking his own testicles or something. I'm not sure. So what now? I got some ideas for you what you can do there in Tampa. I actually took the time to look into some of the things that apparently are popular about Tampa. It is the strip club capital of the world.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
There is a Lowry. You just wait outside in the parking lot, right, to meet the girls?
No, I don't. It's like I don't know. You know, I have a hard enough time, you know, believing people in real life.
I understand. Lowry Park Zoo. Have you thought about that? Have you been to a zoo lately?
No, but I'm writing it down.
And you know, the Kelly sisters are from there.
Mm.
They're the. Do you know who that is?
No.
They're the ones who got David Petraeus in trouble.
Oh, do you have their number?
That would be a great move. So, what's happening? Is the show going to get picked up or what? Let's.
It's looking good. You know, we'll know within a week or so. So
in a week, I will know whether or not your ironclad guarantee of my appearance on season 3 now, I mean, even though we had an ironclad guarantee for season 2, will come to fruition.
I want to do it. I really do. I'm not just dicking around.
No,
I
know. It's completely out of your hands, right? I mean, the show's only
called. No, not completely.
Married.
But, you know, it came down to the wire. And, you know, but like... Like I said, you know, I want to do it, and I'm not, you know.
Well, let me say this, Mark, all right, just so that we can end this on a note that's not going to be uncomfortable.
Setup for it to be uncomfortable.
If it happens that, whatever, the wire shows up again and it doesn't happen, you know, don't go through this whole thing where you ignore my tweets or ignore my texts to you or calls, okay, because you feel uncomfortable about it. That was the most offensive thing about the whole thing.
What happened?
Well, you know, it's like you wouldn't respond to anything that I was until basically the shooting was over. So for like 3 months.
Oh. Yeah, I was busy. I've been busy.
No, I understand. It's a little bit immature.
You're right. I should have manned up to it and just said, look, you know, the story that it got backburnered because nobody trusts you as a performer.
Right.
And, yeah, you're right. That you know, if someone Googled your history in television and said, are you sure? And I'm like, I am. And then literally the head of entertainment in the world said, we can't do this show.
And the head of entertainment in the world is involved at IFC? Are you serious?
He's involved in everything. You know, eventually it all goes back to that guy.
All right.
He's a very old Jew.
Mark Maron.
No, look, you're right, Sam. I'm sorry. I will be in touch, and I want to do this, and I love talking to you.
I know you're going to be up in New York.
We have great chemistry that everybody enjoys. It's classic. It's classic. You're like the volatile, mean guy, and I'm the sort of like sensitive, aggravated guy that you pick on all the time. People love that.
You know, there's a lot of people now staring at their iPhone or their Android because of our app. They're listening to the show on their phone. And they just have this quizzical look on like, wait, wow, I just misinterpreted that whole interview based on the way that Mark assessed it. You follow what I'm saying there, buddy?
Yeah, I've hit that thing that happens when you and I talk for a while. I'm exhausted and I'm losing focus.
All right. All right, well, good luck tonight. And let me know next time you're in New York. Don't just say.
I know, like, I will. Yeah, and I mean, we're going to eat some good food, and we're going to talk about the future.
Yeah, maybe you can meet my kid.
I want to meet the new kid.
Yeah.
That you've been hiding from me.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I will, Sam. I'll be a person. I'll be a friend.
All right, buddy.
Whatever. All right. Good luck with the show. I'm going to get the app now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Give him the address.
He's not going to get the app. No way. Are you kidding? Not even close.
But you can get the app at majorityapp.com.
That's right. And, folks, the app is completely free. And the show is free. At least the first half. Now, today is a freebie Friday because it's already 1:15 and we're well into the members show time. But a reminder that it is your becoming a member which makes this show possible. I don't, you know, occasionally we'll have a Harry's.com ad or Majority Port, I think, is the coupon code for Harry's.com. And occasionally an Audible ad, and if we're lucky, we'll get another Credo ad this year, but 98%, 98.5% of what keeps this show going on a daily basis is our members. And so I want to always thank our members, as I don't do enough, and encourage you to become a member today at majority.fm. And, of course, Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com costs you nothing, gives us a little bit of a kickback, and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Pow, if you're a Marc Maron fan, does that make everybody feel better? You would never have that pow if it wasn't for me setting that up with the Just Coffee people back in the day. And apparently, I've been told by a lot of people the Majority Report blend is much is much better. It's just like a smoother taste. It's not as so angst-ridden. In your coffee. You don't need that in your coffee. All right, now it's time for our weekly submission from Jimmy Reefer Cake. What do we have, Matt?
We have a song which seems to be about Jimmy Reefer Cake's theme songs.
Oh, all right.
It's called Friggin' Theme Song.
Well, it's fair enough. The theme songs he's written for us over the years have been great, so let's hear it.
Yeah, I'm gonna sing a song about theme songs. Superstar callers get their own theme song. Chaney in the Bushes, Jermo, and the one and only Don. When they call, aren't you supposed to play that song? What's the matter? Is the freaking theme song too long? If that's the case, then just play a little bit of piece of that song. Ready to go, right before the freaking callers are home. Why else do you think I made a freaking theme song? And I would be glad to make another freaking theme song. Yeah, Nate from Texas, he deserves himself a theme song. Oh, Jay Tingle, that man should get a freaking theme song. Triangle Bill, a Moral Monday theme song. But why would I make another freaking theme song? If you don't play the friggin' theme song. I am right, if you disagree, you are wrong. Just play the goddamn mother friggin' theme song.
Well, all right. Jimmy turning inward this week. And You can read the page from allthehypocrisy.com, where you can find all his musical stylings. And apparently he is a little upset that Matt is a little bit slow on the trigger for the theme song. The number is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I don't know what's going on. Not seeing it show up there. If you want to IM me, Majority FM is the number to a call, to IM. I wonder if we're having a little problem with our phone system. We shall see. All right, but let's go to the IMs. Folks, just a reminder, vacation next week, and we will be doing, we have some pre-tape shows. We have some deep archive shows, some great ones, George Carlin, Janine talking to Lewis Lapham and Mark Danner on his book about torture. The interview we did with Rick Perlstein 10 years ago, almost to the day. What else do we have? One or two others. I can't recall now.
Well, yeah,
our
phone
system seems to be down right now. Not exactly sure what's going on with that. So let's just get right to the IMs. Circus, did you guys change something with the camera angle or the lighting? It looks like you're in front of a green screen. No, one of our lights went out, basically, is what happened. Slappy Shack. Hi, Sam. Since it's Friday and y'all are taking a break, I'd like to suggest The Secret Government by Bill Moyers. It's quite germane to your Thursday Reagan topic. Secret Government. I will check that out. Oh, yeah, I didn't ask Marin for a movie recommendation. I mean, really, you know what I'm going to do, though? I'm going to attempt to binge watch Marin's show over the vacation. I probably won't. Oh, you know what I want to talk about? I watched a couple episodes of Continuum. Anybody?
Not seen it.
You know, so far not so great. It's okay. It's like a procedural. It's basically a cop procedural that isn't quite as interesting as it, you know, as it looked like it might be. So I'm not, you know, I don't know. Militant Apathy. I'm sorry, Slappy Shock. Oh, yeah, okay. Milton Apathy, I'm sure you'll ponder on this tree of woe. Oh, no. Victoria Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, has lost her race.
Oh.
In a bid as an independent candidate for a seat on a county commission in Tennessee. Wow. Wow. She can't win a seat on a county commission? The Tennessean reports that Jackson received 632 votes. Two others received more votes. Judy Lynch Herbert with 1,422. Now, to be fair, Judy Lynch Herbert was a star on Mad TV. And Betsy Hester with 1,380, also known for her work on the show Fridays. So, no, that's not true. The county commission has two commissioners in each of its 12 districts. So, Victoria Jackson lost. Let's hear one of her ads, shall we? Got one right here.
The following is a public service announcement from Victoria Jackson.
Subsidize the gyms, own a retirement home, a performing arts center, I think that should be in the private sector, and I think the government owning all that stuff.
That's
is
not my music.
That's hers. So I would vote more conservative than my opponents, Betsy and Judy. Yes, I'm running for county commissioner. Why? Because I care about you. So please vote for me on August 7th.
Long ad. I can't even get through
if the first
you love minute.
Freedom as much as I do. Thank you. You're voting for me, right, Joe Dan?
I'm voting for Betsy Hester. Of course I'm voting for Victoria.
All right.
What?
There she is.
Is she actually, like, delayed or something? Like, did she just have some type of, like, undiagnosed thing? I'm being really sincere.
I don't know. But I got to say, what were those 632 people thinking? All right, let's go back to the IMs. Brian Schweitzer's Gaydar. Could Brian Schweitzer become the Democratic nominee for Senate in Montana? I think he could win in November. I don't know. I think it may be too late. John Walsh, of course, has dropped out of the race. I think it's too late. I guess since Nobel Peace Laureate Bush and Chains, Peace Laureate Obama illegally armed his Al-Qaeda in Syria buddies with weapons. He's allowed to destroy them. Good thing the U.S. taxpayer is footing the bill twice. Send me some links of him funding ISIS. Pasadena MMs, I live in Missouri, and it's crazy that our poorly publicized primary elections a few days ago, where state constitutional amendments were voted upon. What can we do to make the amendments to state constitution less hidden? Not much. There's a reason why they'll put them on at an off-year election. It's when the right-wingers know that their base will come out. Richard Saul, I remember those Desert Storm trading cards. I haven't thought about those since I was an 11-year-old kid buying them at the White Hen Pantry down the street. Seemed pretty normal to me at the time, but that's pretty effed up. Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I kept that box now for 23 years just because I was so shocked by the whole thing. Carl Sagan, I love the interviews like yesterday's that take a broad view of dynamic shifts on the left and right over time. The discussion made me think of Hunter S. Thompson's soliloquy in Fear and Loathing when he imagined the promise of the 60s as a wave that had reached its high watermark. I realized that there were always groups on the fringes of left and right that are willing to use violent tactics, but I view the frequency of their use by a particular side as a sign that their ideological wave has peaked. For example, I see the right wing's current militancy and desperation as the pinnacle of a four-decade project that senses its demise. My question would be about the bombings Rick Perlstein was alluding to from the 70s. I get the sense that during the 70s, the left, which had been on the ascendancy since the 30s, was using more terrorist tactics and perhaps as a sign that their influence was about to falter. Do you get a sense that the radical left was more active, popular, influential at that time? Were there a lot of these bombings attributed to leftist groups? Yeah, I mean, most of them, I believe, were leftist. You know, there may have been some that were not necessarily, but I imagine, yes. I'm only curious because I think the left is still stereotyped in this way, and the right is not. Perhaps the criticism is a fair one in the 70s, but unfortunately a majority of the Beltway know it alls are still living in that mindset. Yeah, it's...
I have to say, there was this moment on Bill Maher a while ago where Raihan Salam was on, and they were talking about, I think it was a long time ago. I think it was people like bringing weapons to Tea Party rallies. And Raihan Salam started going on about the weathermen. And Bill Maher just said, dude, you weren't born yet
right. When
that was happening. Like, what are you talking about? And it was amazing to see that caught, because I do think that type of analogy and comparison is trotted out really regularly of these groups that maybe the last thing they did possibly was in the early 80s, mainly 70s.
70s, right. Crusher, to clarify, she is terrified of an Astorino administration. I don't know what that is in reference to. Militant Apathy 3, what about Syria then, Sam? I agree with you about Iraq now, but why didn't you feel that way about that Syrian massacre? I think it was much harder. I don't think, frankly, I mean, look, here's my calculation. And It's not too dissimilar, at least from what President Obama stated the other day, yesterday, I guess. The issue is there a potential genocide or an ongoing genocide? Then the issue is, can we actually stop it? And how involved do we need to be to stop it? And how clear is it that there is a direct line between our actions to stop it and their the chances of it of us achieving the goal? And I don't think that there was something that we could do in Syria. And you know, there may be an argument, and I don't necessarily agree with it, and I certainly didn't at the time, that had we early on provided funds and weapons early on to the moderate and sort of democracy movement in Syria, to that wing of the rebels, I guess, that may have strengthened them in a way that would have made them players if, you know, down the road there is a negotiated settlement. Or it may have diminished, you know, someone like ISIS because they would have filled a vacuum that ISIS filled. I don't know. That's one argument out there. I certainly didn't buy it at the time. Ironically, liberals and cons' interests converged when it came to Syria and Russia. I believe liberals were defensive of Snowden, anti-war, and generally suspicious of government, while the cons were just Obama haters celebrating anything that makes them look weak. But now that Russia is shooting down civilian planes and lobbing missiles into Ukraine, has that dynamic changed? Militant Apathy 3. So Marin is bipolar, 900 milligrams extended release lithium. When I think of coming age in the early 80s can be summed up with one movie, The Day After, ABC movie of the week. I was terrified. I remember writing the local civil defense, and they would send you this book with plans for building out a fallout shelter for free. Dr. Radmanthes. Hi, Sam. You realize the Shia majority ethnically cleansed the Sunnis from many of the areas in Iraq where they used to coexist. Yes. That, to a large degree, is why the sectarian violence of 7-8 years ago died down for a bit, because the Shia had succeeded in their own form of genocide. Well, I don't know that it was genocide, but they certainly were engaging in, like, transfers.
What was the Disney thing you wanted to tell me?
Oh, well, let me finish this here. Now we see the Sunnis supporting ISIS to do something similar in an area where they are the majority. When you have two sides, I don't think that's what they're
you don't have universal support for Sunni for ISIS. That's inaccurate.
And I don't think that they are looking for ISIS to be doing what it's doing here. I think they are doing it. This is a way to push back on the Shia.
The extent to which that there has been a lot more Sunni support for ISIS than you would expect is just a result of Sunnis basically being repressed by the Maliki government and seeing an opportunity to kind of get a wedge back in. And also, frankly, like other people, maybe some of them are just terrified of this group and trying to appease it.
When you have two sides who are genocidal toward each other and you've ruled out ground troops and occupation, how can you possibly expect to improve the situation with airstrikes? Well, in this instance, I'm not talking about improving the situation. I'm talking about specifically stopping ISIS from attacking these people who are stuck on this mountain and either providing enough cover for them to get down from the mountain and locate somewhere else where they are safe. I don't know, behind Kurdish lines. I don't know where that would be. Or airdropping stuff to them. I don't know that there is anything that can improve the situation. Are we going to get sucked into, also, is ISIS part of the rebels in Syria? They occupy territory there. Are we going to get sucked into the Syrian airstrikes or more clandestine strikes in Syria now? Since ISIS will certainly retreat there if we don't. I mean, look, I think we need a more specific, detailed plan for what the agenda is from the administration. I imagine we'll get that, but I don't think any of that is on the docket. The historical equivalent of me attacking ISIS now seems something like choosing to intervene in the Iran-Iraq war of the 1980s with an airstrike. Now, it's completely not.
It's ridiculous.
The forces involved here are completely different. You have unarmed civilians stuck on a hill. We're not getting involved in... and ISIS is just not the same force that the Iranians are. I just don't think it's... Canine cats, neoliberalism puts a price on everything. It has no value, does not contribute to the economy with money value, then the thing should be auctioned off. I guess those of us who are retired or disabled should be sent to the Soylent Green factory. Nefertiti, National Guard will stop financial support and advertising in NASCAR. Dale Earnhardt Jr. after the season resulted by a push from the Dems to stop all the money being spent to recruit via million-dollar sponsorship. This, of course, has infuriated the Republicans using one of their big recruiting source audiences. CS Monitor is the source. Garen, thank you, Sam and Cliff, for talking honestly on the Yazidi situation. As a lefty, it always bugs me when people on our side carry non-intervention to absurd extremes, usually couching in pacifist rhetoric. To quote Walker from The Big Lebowski, pacifism is nothing to hide behind. Not picking a side in a side in a conflict means picking the side of whoever is winning, usually because they are better founded, equipped, or ruthless. Oop. I got to get going. I got to catch a train. There are costs to all these decisions. All right, let's keep going. Ben Stein's Bonaire. Sam, we all know you're taking super male vitality. Didn't a listener send you some? Was that a real ad? It was. GGG. Sam just saw a good film, No God, No Master, about Palmer Raid in the earliest 20th century. Oh, interesting. No God, No Master. Emo Prods. You guys are made for each other. I love it. Bon Bon Sokolov. I love to hear Mark and you together again. Bye, Minerally. Mark reminds me of why I stopped listening to WTF. Totally wrapped up in trivial BS. A Squared. Sam, Matt, Michael, enjoy your well-deserved vacation. Hoping you return the future again in Iraq or another country, indeed. Jay Tingle, surprised to learn you paid Matt and Michael to do extra show each week. One would think that would be a prerequisite for them, not a good month of negotiations for you. Sam, I would buy Majority Report mountain bike accessories, but not kettlebells. I think the bartender in The Shining says you've always been the caretaker, not what Marin said. And don't get me started on the day after. Obama and Cheney's. I doubt Corolla has a winery either. He's just rebranding somebody else's piss swill mixed with Kool-Aid. Monorail. Mangria is taken. So how about Majority Report brand Manly Ashevitz? Nathan Ray. Mark Maron would be a character in The Shining who struggles for half the film to get to the hotel only to get an axe in the chest. A spoiler. Reagan in the money. Also, keep an eye on Oregon. I guess it's about to get a bump of pure Kansas Coke. Coke Brothers money. I will check that out. And Buenara, regarding your ironclad guarantee of a third season Marin appearance, ironclad was a guarantee back when slapping iron plates on a steam wooden boat worked as armor. Maybe you need a more modern guarantee. Broken clock. Any updates from that user who thought they could set up browsing from IM a couple months ago? I haven't heard, but I'm going to dig into all this stuff over vacation. The Majority Report coffee blend is so much less bitter than the WTF blend. I found Continuum unspeakably awful. You're being far too diplomatic. I'm happy now. Sam, I'm 63 and do kettlebell swings. 35 pounds, 75 reps, 3 sets. It's aerobic, and it works almost every muscle in the body. You can make your own for very cheap. Wow. Maybe I'll check it out. Kettlebell. Matt in the BK, enjoyed that non-shticky interview with Marin. Can't take too much of the usual ones. Also, fool me twice. You can't get fooled again. Started watching Continuum. It's okay. Mitch Connor, I'll cuss out any representative for the listeners. Record what they say and want to post it to cussoutcongress.org/.com. NYK Upstate, Sam just saw a link on Crooks and Liars. Your favorite politician is teasing you again about a 2016 presidential bill. George Pataki. Forget it. Jimmy Reefer Cake, Nate from Texas here. I would like my theme song, please. I'll play it even if nobody else does. Maple Spices, keep it classic and binge watch Black Adder on your vacation. Martin, will anyone ever bring up the historical fact that George Bush, the dad, didn't march on Baghdad for fear of destabilizing the region? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago with, based on what Cheney said. Moshi Moshi, I forgot that's where POW came from, or POW came from, while you were doing your ad for Just Coffee. Communist Dog, Trey LaPark, listen, Sam, socialist, tell Eminem if they keep telling lies about Trey Gowdy, they'll have to answer to me. Trey LaPark, space 3C. Nancy in Dallas, Sammy, I'm going to suggest Fargo, the FX series. With Billy Bob Thornton. Muggity T. Jones, Iraq and Palestine are just like Vietnam. It's not a winnable war, just sustainable. Ronald Reagan, Sam, haven't been IMing, which I know has probably been dragging down the better half. P.S., beyond general discussion, the immigration laws literally give the president power to do lots and lots of things, indeed. E. Greg, can we stop Boko Haram genocide in Nigeria? The latest incident has hundreds of Christians burned alive. 600,000 people have now fled their homes. I don't see much international help to the Nigerian military situation there. I don't know. Can we? Benja Walton, it's not that the U.S. funded ISIS, but that ISIS is using weapons and tanks taken from the Iraqi military, which we armed. The strikes Obama is sending will likely destroy lots of American weapons. Yes, I mentioned that. Right, we pay the bill twice. Don 88, if you think the right is not going out with a bang, you're crazy. Take the Clive and Bundy Ranch scenario, for example, provoking federal agents. Sam, I'm telling you, things are going to get really bad in the near future, especially around the 2020 election. One more thing, guys. Love the show as always, and enjoy your vacations. Rypop Phil, number of bombings associated with air travel at that time was about suicide and air travel insurance. There were a few hijackings to Cuba. It was when the air marshal program got started. Jay-Z, are you suggesting the U.S. wasn't interfering in the Iran-Iraq war? Seriously? What? Are you talking to me? He's just talking about airstrikes, I think that guy was saying. We obviously provided all sorts of weaponry to, Hussein. That's with their classic picture of Rumsfeld shaking his hand. Also, score draw on the Marin interview there. Fair enough. Shanks off. Real men don't drink sangria. Thus, Mangria had to be invented. And the final I am of the week, and my final I am before vacation, Matt and Mike will be here on Monday. Then we'll have some pre-records for you through the following week, some deep archive shows. Alex B., Sam, off topic. I was talking to a libertarian about getting money out of politics, basically Young Turks' Wolfpack position. His reply was, well, I think we should just end all regulation. If the government can't do anything, it's not worth buying. What the heck do you say to that? You move on to the next person. Folks, see you soon.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. Choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5.
still takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The months shifted into you while I shifted in and out.